Today is the glorious appearance day, or celebration of the glorious appearance day of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So we'll speak about Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur this morning. So, Om Gana Timidanda Shah Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshuran Meditam Yenitasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, of course, is the spiritual master of Srila Gaura Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj, who is the spiritual master of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who is Bhaktivinoda Thakur's son, who is the spiritual master of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. So, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is a Shaktavesh avatar. Shaktavesh means he's empowered incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who appeared to preach Krishna consciousness, but he actually appeared in at least a partially non-Vaishnava family. Therefore, there's a specific name. Let's see, I'm trying to find that name. He's known as the someone who appeared in the family of demons. Oh, yeah, he would be known as Daitya Kulera Prahlad. In other words, he's compared to Prahlad Maharaj, who was born in the family of demons. Not that his family was like absolute demons, in the sense of Hiranyakashipu demons, but because his Vaishnavism was not respected in his family. Actually, especially on his mother's side, there was no respect for any Vaishnavas at all. And therefore, he was called Kedaranatha, which is the name of Lord Shiva, or the abode of Lord Shiva. Kedaranatha means like the Lord. Natha means Lord. Kedaranath is a place where Lord Shiva resides in the Himalayas. Anyway, so they, in other words, they were Shaivites or mixed something else, but they were not actually Vaishnavas. Now, Krishna arranges that to glorify his devotees and actually show how his devotees can set an example of how one can become Krishna conscious. Because Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in his early ages, as we'll read about today, and we'll speak about today, was more interested in English literature and Christianity than he was in Hinduism or anything coming from India. In fact, he had pretty much rejected Hinduism per se. The reason he had rejected Hinduism per se was because Hinduism was more or less presenting the impersonal or the monistic viewpoint. And he was attracted, of course, to a theistic understanding, and Christianity presented a more theistic understanding than Hinduism presents. And, I mean, you'll see that generally in Hinduism. It's like, it's not really theistic. The so-called Hinduism, of course, is just an invented word. There's no mention of the word Hindu in the Vedic literature. In fact, that designation became prominent because the people from the other side of the Indus River began to call the people on the eastern side of the Indus River, that is most of India, they began to call them Sindhus, and that Sindhu was pronounced in India as Hindu. You understand? Sindhu became transformed into Hindu. And that this Hindu designation was never an internal designation. It's not that people would say to each other, we're talking about 100, 200 years ago, that people would say to each other that, you know, I'm a Hindu. You know, 200 or 300 years ago, it really wasn't like that. It was an external designation. In other words, external means that people would call followers of the Vedic literature Hindus. And sometimes internally people, when they're dealing with external people, would refer to themselves as Hindus. But the Hindu never was something used between different members of the Vedic tradition, the Hindu designation. So anyway, so in any case, Hinduism generally is understood as something impersonal or something hodgepodge, as Srila Prabhupada would say. Having an interesting conversation back there. So Hinduism is generally understood as something hodgepodge or impersonal, So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, of course, was not interested in that, as we'll hear about a little later. So, so in the beginning of his childhood, he was raised in a very opulent fashion in a place called Bira Nagara. And this is because he was studying at the primary school that was started by his grandmother, and also attending an English school in a place called Krishna Nagar, which is very close to Navadweep. So when his older brother died of cholera, this is when he was about 11 years old, his father passed away shortly thereafter. And when his father passed away shortly thereafter, somehow or other there was some sort of dealings, improper dealings. So the grant of land and all the money they had were taken away. They were transformed. The whole family was transformed from a wealthy family to a poverty-stricken family. And so Bhaktivinoda Thakur experienced that the wealth he had was simply illusory. You know, he was raised in the lap of luxury, and then all of a sudden, he's living like a pauper. But still, he maintained his determination. He's a very determined person. So at 12 years of age, his mother arranged a marriage for him to a five-year-old girl. Now, that may appear like something that's, you know, not acceptable. However, it's not that they lived together. It's not that you had a 12-year-old boy live with a five-year-old girl. I know there's been many articles recently decrying childhood marriages, you know, like girls forced into marriage. It was arranged like that so that throughout their childhood, these people could be thinking, now I have my husband, now I have my wife. So there wouldn't be any of this dating procedure like you have in the West, and of course in India now you have the dating. Prabhupada commented very heavily, and I don't know if it's politically correct, but Prabhupada said it's true. Prabhupada said, what you call girlfriends in the West, we call what?
Prostitutes.
You know, so Prabhupada was really heavy about this. I mean, if you say this publicly, people will get upset with you. You know, because, you know, the people have, you know, even our own children, they're going to the regular schools and they have their girlfriends, isn't it? Here's my girlfriend of the month. Or the boyfriend of the month. Then they become very depressed when their girlfriend dumps them. Anyone's heard about that before? Dump them? Yeah, and girlfriend gets another boyfriend. So the marriages were arranged. It was an arranged thing, and they fixed them. Even Prabhupada's marriage was arranged like that. And Prabhupada, of course, he didn't particularly, let's say, have a romantic interest in his wife, to say the least. And at one point, he wanted to marry another wife, just because at that time polygamy was very much in favor. So, but his father said, no, you just stick to this one wife. This one wife is actually a very good blessing for you. It will teach you to be detached. You know, if she was actually very compatible, it would be a disaster. Anyway, so we see that many times, that when one has a husband or a wife that's not so, let's say, compatible, then one is more likely to take up Krishna consciousness. I mean, I've just seen it, you know. It's just like, of course, sometimes we have compatible husbands and wives, and they're very good devotees too, right? But certain circumstances there help us take shelter of Krishna and his holy names, whether it's family relationships or disease or some problem really forces us to take shelter. Anyway, so let's get on with the story. So there was this marriage that was arranged. He didn't live with her, obviously, until much later. Let's see. He assisted a great, renowned editor in judging manuscripts, even when he was 13 years old. Sorry, and this is how intelligent Bhaktivinoda Thakur was. He became an expert English reader, speaker, and writer, even at 13 and 14 years of age. So when he became sick, one time he became sick from the salty water in Calcutta, so he was sent to a village to get cured by a Muslim soothsayer. That means many times the Muslims, even I've seen in Fiji, the natives, they have some knowledge of different types of herbal medicine and everything like that. And even they have some black magic there. Even in Brazil, you go there, there's black magic. I saw devotees subjected to voodoo and everything like that in Calcutta, and not Calcutta, in Caracas and also Brazil. So they sent him to a Muslim for being cured. And this Muslim was also able to predict the future. And the Muslim predicted that Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who was known as Kedaranath Dutt, would become recognized as a great devotee of Lord Krishna in the future. So at the age of 18, he went to college in Calcutta. And he studied English extensively, as well as, of course, Bengali, which is his native language. And he taught speech making, even when he was 18 years of age, to a person who later became a well-known orator in the parliament, in the British parliament, not only the Indian parliament, in the British parliament. So even at 18, he was showing his great expertise and intelligence. And he even composed, in the early years, a English epic. Epic means a very long book, and like a poem. It's called the Poriad, which was about the life of Porus, who met Alexander the Great. So he was very much taken in by English literature and Greek literature and Christian literature. So he found Christian literature at that time much more interesting than Hindu monism. So he spent many hours writing and comparing the writings of different English writers such as Channing, Parker, Emerson, and another person called Newman. I've never heard of Newman before. And he gave different lectures at the British Indian Society on different subject matters. So in 1858 and 1859, he went to... I have very good hearing. Yes. We accept your apologies. Anyway, I can hear whispers, like, it's clear someone's just, like, right next to me. So he went to Orissa to visit his grandfather, his paternal grandfather, Raja Vallabha Dutt. Remember, his maternal family, that means mother's family, was not favorable to Vaishnavas, but his paternal family was a little bit more favorable. So this Raja Vallabha Dutt was living as an ascetic in the Orissan countryside, even though previously he had been a very aristocratic person. And he could predict the future. And he predicted that Bhaktivinoda Thakur would preach Krishna consciousness widely, especially in different languages like the English language. And he advised him to visit all the monasteries and temples in the state of Orissa. So at that time, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, after he did that, he was considering how to make money, because he wanted to make money in an honest, brahminical way. He didn't want to be a shopkeeper. Shopkeeper means you have to lie, like Prabhupada Vaishya has to. Basically, you know, it's called a white lie, where you tell someone, for you, there's no profit. There was a big sale today, and actually you increased the prices. So he decided to become a school teacher, and he was a pioneer in Orissa in English teaching. In a town in Orissa called Bhadraka, his first son, Achyutananda, was born. That was in 1860. So he became the headmaster of a particular school in Medinipura, and he began to examine all the different religious sects that were present there. I mean, that means all the different philosophies and practices. Not just the philosophy, but the actual practice. And then after examining this, he came to the conclusion at this particular point that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, his teachings were the first and foremost teachings about religion. But he could not get a copy of any of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's writings, or especially anything about Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, especially the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So he looked far and wide for Chaitanya Charitamrita, and he couldn't get a copy at this point. So shortly after that, and about 1861, his first wife passed away, and then he got married again to Bhagavati Day. And he, in 1861, he also became posted as a deputy magistrate in the government of Bengal, and he became the collection officer. And that's one of the reasons he did that, was because he saw the corruption, how people were actually taking bribes all the time, and he wanted to stop the corruption in society. And then in 1866, that was 5 years later, he took the position of deputy register, and he was supervising the deputy collector and the deputy magistrate in a district called Chapara. And he studied Persian and Urdu at that time. Let's see. And eventually he found the copy of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Oh, yeah, that was in 1868. I mean, so he really wanted, from the time, let's say, about 1860 to 1868, he was looking for a Chaitanya Charitamrita, and he couldn't find a copy. And then he got, in 1868, he received copies of the Srimad Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita from Calcutta. And then when he began to read the Chaitanya Charitamrita, his faith in Krishna consciousness increased exponentially. And then remember, he was and is an eternally liberated associate of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So his apparent, let's say, ignorance of Krishna consciousness was just a pastime. It's not that he was actually ignorant of Krishna consciousness, but under the influence of Yogamaya, the devotees like Haridas Thakur and Bhaktivinoda Thakur and others appear to be forgetful of their actual relationship with Krishna. There are many different reasons for this. One of them is to teach us about the progress of Krishna consciousness. So then he was posted in a place called Champarana. And there's a famous story there that in Champarana, people used to worship a ghost in a banyan tree, which had the power to influence the local judge to decide in favor of the worshiper. That's pretty good. If you want to win a case in court, you just go to the tree and just pray to the tree, you know, worship the tree. Just like we were in the car 2 days ago, and the highway patrol stopped Gopal, who was driving. So I prayed to Krishna. And then Gopal was getting all nervous and everything like that, practically crying. And then the highway patrol came by after the prayers, and he said, "I'm only giving you a warning this time." So the prayers work. Anyway, so we worship Krishna. So these people used to worship the ghost in the banyan tree. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur engaged the father of a famous girl scholar to read Srimad Bhagavatam under the tree, and he read the Srimad Bhagavatam, and by the time he finished the Srimad Bhagavatam, which was about 1 month, the tree just crashed to the ground. And many people at that point had faith or developed faith in Srimad Bhagavatam. And then after that, he went to Jagannath Puri, which he became set in Jagannath Puri. And right near Jagannath Puri in a town called Kamalanala, there was a great yogi there. And his name was Vishakhisena. This is a famous story, too. And this Vishakhisena would do things like leaning into fire while sitting closely to the fire. And he had fire coming out of his hair. And he claimed to be Mahavishnu. And he had two friends. Brahma and Shiva. And so the kings were actually so afraid of him, the kings in Orissa, that they were providing funds. In other words, they would give donations to him, and he would construct a temple to himself. And they also sent to him, you know, young girls from all the villages so he could enjoy his Rasa Leela things. And so this rascal declared he would get rid of the British by getting becoming the king of Orissa himself. And because of that, not because that he was dancing with women in the middle of the night, that didn't bother the British, but because he challenged the British wanted to get rid of him. I thought he was a revolutionary. So they issued orders to arrest him, and everybody was afraid to arrest him. Even the British soldiers were afraid to arrest him because they saw he had some great power. So then finally the district commissioner for Orissa requested Bhaktivinoda Thakur to bring him into justice. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur went personally to this rascal, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur first was very, very kind to him. In other words, that one of the ways that you deal with an enemy first is you have sweet words. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur said to him, after this rascal showed some powers, Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, "Oh, I appreciate your powers very much." Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, "You've become a great yogi, and I appreciate this very much. And so why don't you come with me to have darshan of Lord Jagannath?" And this rascal said, "Why should I come to see Lord Jagannath? He's only a hunk of wood. I am the supreme in person." And at that point, those were fighting words for Kedaranatha Datta. He wasn't Bhaktivinoda Thakur yet. But those were fighting words. He became furious and grabbed this rogue with his own hands, brought him to Puri, and threw him in jail. And he was guarded by 3 dozen Muslim constables, because the Hindus, they were too much afraid of him. So whenever you have a rascal yogi, you should bring in the Muslims to take care of him. That should be our process. Yes, we can go to the mosque and say, "Please come to this yoga center where they're teaching bogi yoga," and take care of these so-called yogis. And so, and they also had 72 policemen guarding him day and night. 3 dozen, that's 36, plus 72. That's a lot of people. Like, wow. Anyway, so that, phew, that's 108. That's auspicious, isn't it? Yeah, 36 plus 72 is 108. I just remember that. Wow. So it was an auspicious number they had guarding him. So Brahma and Shiva, they avoided arrest by saying that we were forced to be Brahma and Shiva. Later on, of course, that was a good excuse. You know, someone forced me. It's like in World War II, you know, many of the Nazis said we were following orders. We were following orders. And still, they had to be tried at the end of the war. So similarly, people in different places like Libya, they say we're following orders, but still, they're going to be tried in The Hague. So the trial lasted 18 days. You can imagine what sort of testimony was going on for 18 days. Thousands of people gathered outside demanding this rascal's release. So on the sixth day of the trial, Bhaktivinoda Thakur's daughter, Kadambini, became very sick and nearly died, but a day later she was completely better. So was the yogi's power. Everyone recognized this. On the last day of the trial, Bhaktivinoda Thakur had a high fever and he had to practically be carried into court. But he pronounced the man guilty and sentenced him to 18 months, only 18 months, for political conspiracy. In other words, there was no law against being Vishnu and dancing with other people's wives. The law was political conspiracy. Sometimes you have to do that You have to get someone under a law. Even though they're rascals, you have to figure out what law to convict them under. So when he was getting ready for being put in jail, there was one Dr. Walter, an Englishman, who cut off the yogi's hair because he'd heard the yogis keep power in their hair. Ah. So we should go into yoga centers with our buzzers. I think we have a program in the yoga center tomorrow. I bring my buzzers there. Yeah, I'm going to do that tomorrow. We'll do it a past life regression, so we'll just go while they're in trance. So, anyway, so he fell to the floor, and he became completely depressed, having lost his power. And within 3 months, he committed suicide in the jail. That's something like that in the Bible. You know, that Samson, his hair was cut off, and he lost all his power because Delilah cut it off, his girlfriend. So after that, in Jagannath-puri, he began to study the commentaries of the various acharyas, such as Sridhar Swami and Jiva Goswami, especially Jiva Goswami Sandarbhas. And in 1874 to 1893, he studied all these books intensely and sort of remained in seclusion, but at the same time did his worldly duties as a judge. And he wrote many books like the Krishna Sangita, Tattva Sutra, Tattva Viveka, and many books in Bengali also. Let's see. What is this? There was one he's not a rascal now, but there was one person who was acting improperly named Raghunath Das, and he used to criticize Bhaktivinoda Thakur as being unauthorized. And he said Bhaktivinoda Thakur is not wearing Kanti Mala or Tilak. And the reason he wasn't is because in those days you didn't wear those things until you were initiated. Nowadays we go out to the festivals and the devotees distribute Kanti Mala, isn't it? At Rath Yatra. Anyway, so this person advised all the other Vaishnavas to avoid Bhaktivinoda Thakur. But this person developed a deathly illness. In a dream, Lord Jagannath appeared to him and told him to pray for the mercy of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And so Bhaktivinoda Thakur came, gave him medicine, and then he was cured. There's another story about Charanadas Babaji, who came up with this mantra, Nistai Gaur Radhe Shyam Hari Krishna Hari Ram, which is still being chanted today. Bhaktivinoda Thakur preached to him, and after a long time, Charanadas Babaji came to his senses and begged forgiveness from Bhaktivinoda Thakur. But 6 months later, he went mad and died in great distress. And there's many people who still follow him today in Orissa and also Vrindavan. So then Bhaktivinoda Thakur became the manager of the mandir, that Jagannath temple. And he established extreme regularity in the worship of the deity. He used to carry around a pocket watch, which isn't so normal those days. People didn't have wristwatches in those days, but mainly they were pocket watches. So he would spend long hours discussing Krishna and chanting, and he would spend a lot of time at the Tota Gopinath Mandir. That's the mandir of Gadadhar Pandit Goswami, where Lord Chaitanya entered into when he left this world, and also Gadadhar Pandit Goswami entered into. And it also at the tomb of Haridas Thakur, the Siddhabakul, where Haridas Thakur used to chant, and the Gambira, where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu lived. So, in Jagannath Puri, on the fifth day of the dark moon night of Smog in the year 1874, the fourth son of Bhaktivinoda Thakur took birth. His name was Bimala Prasad, who later on became known as Shilabhakti Santa Saraswati Thakur. In 1874, Bhaktivinoda Thakur discovered that the king of Puri had taken about 80,000 rupees for sense gratification. Now, in those days, 80,000 rupees was a lot of money. Nowadays, you know, it's like $2,000, less than $2,000. So it's not that much money. So this money belonged to the temple. I guess he took it from the donation box. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur forced this king to give Lord Jagannath Bhoga 52 times a day. And the money was gone pretty quickly. And the king became really angry at Bhaktivinoda Thakur and employed 50 pundits to perform a ceremony for killing Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And this ceremony went on for 30 days. And right when they were doing the final oblations, the swaha, the king's son died. So anyway, so this is very important. So finally, after all these years, in about 1878, he took initiation from a person named Bipini Bihari Goswami. And this Bipini Bihari Goswami came in the Janava family, Janava's family. In other words, a descendant. Actually a descendant of Vasudha rather than Janava. Lord Nityananda had two wives. Of course, there's the disciplic succession from Janava, but there's the seminal succession from Vasudha. Vasudha was the second wife of Lord Nityananda, and she was the one who had the children, not Janava. So anyway, so he took initiation finally, and that's at that point he put on neck beads and tilak. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur began to preach extensively all over Bengal and Orissa. And he published the Bhagavad Gita, published an edition of the Bhagavad Gita with a Sanskrit commentary of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, which he translated into Bengali. Later on, he published the Sri Chaitanya Shikshamrita, and he found a particular book that was part of the Atharva Veda called the Chaitanya Upanishad. The Chaitanya Upanishad deals with Lord Chaitanya's advent and Lord Chaitanya's teachings, and it's part of the original four Vedas, the Atharva Veda. So when he's later on, he was posted at Krishnanagar, and he used to go to Navadweep and search for the birthplace of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. One night he was sitting in Navadweep. I used to misunderstand that. I thought he was sitting in his place in Godramdweep, but actually in Navadweep when he saw the bright light over where Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had appeared. So it was in Navadweep, not Godramdweep, not his house in Godramdweep. And he spotted a very tall tal tree with a strange substance attached to it. Near the tree was a small building that gave off a remarkable effulgence. And he began to study many manuscripts and discovered that this was actually the ancient city of Mayapur, not the modern-day Navadweep. And that was confirmed later on by Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj, who was about 125 years old at that point. When Jagannath Das Babaji saw the place, he jumped up and down in ecstasy. Actually, even though he was 125 years old, he jumped out of the basket that was held by his servant, Bihari, and he began to dance in ecstasy. So he went several times to Vrindavan, to visit Vrindavan. He installed the Gaura Vishnu Priya deities at the Yoga Pit. You can see these deities today. And in 1894, at 56 years of age, he retired from his post as deputy magistrate. And he stayed at Surabhi Kunj and preached, as well as revised his old writings. Surabhi Kunj is where Bhaktivinoda Thakur's house is now in Godramdweep, at the other side of the Jalangi River. Some of you may have visited that place. From time to time, he went to Calcutta to beg money to build the temple at the River Pit. He preached in Tripura. Let's see. In 1908, he took the Babaji Vesh, that means like a sannyas, and until 1910, he still kept moving between Calcutta and Puri and was still writing books. But during 1910, he shut himself up and entered into samadhi, claiming that he was paralyzed. On June 23rd, 1914, just before noon, Bhaktivinoda Thakur left his body. And this day is also the disappearance day of Gadadhar Pandit Goswami. So, let me read about his schedule. I have a few minutes left, just so you understand how dedicated he was to carrying out his duties, both material and spiritual, and being a very responsible grihastha. Okay. So he would take rest at night at about 8 o'clock. He would rise at 10 o'clock at night. Then he would light his oil lamp and start writing. He would write many Vaishnava literatures. Then he would write from 10 p.m. to 4 a.m. Then he'd take rest for half an hour, and he'd rise, get up, he'd wash his hands and face, chant some japa, and at 7 o'clock he would write letters, 7 o'clock in the morning. 7:30 he would read some literatures. At 8:30 he would receive the guests or continue to read. At 9:30 to 9:45 he took rest, just 15 minutes. Actually, he was expert in doing something that nowadays is quite popular. It's called the power nap. You understand? Where, because if you nap too long during the day, you become ignorant, and you become lethargic and dull. But if you just take a little five-minute nap, you just close your eyes, and like that, you just revive your energy. So he did this continually. So at 9:45, he took his morning bath. He took breakfast of a half quart of milk, a couple of chapatis, and a little fruit. And then at 9:55, 10-minute breakfast, he went to court, and in court he would wear a coat and pants, but he also had double-sized Tulsi neck beads and tilak. He was very strong in his decisions. He did not allow any humbug in the court. Nobody could stand before him. He would shave his head monthly. He never allowed harmonium, and he never had any debts. It's interesting. At 10 o'clock, the court began. At 1 o'clock, the court was finished. He'd come home, bathe, and refresh. At 2 o'clock, he'd return to the office, and he'd work for the rest of the day. And at 5 o'clock, he'd translate works from Sanskrit to Bengali and then take his evening meal of rice, a couple of chapatis, half a quart of milk again. And he always consulted his pocket watch and kept time very punctually. He was always charitable to brahmanas, equally befriended the other castes. He never showed any pride. He never accepted gifts from anybody. He declined all honors and titles offered by the government to him on the grounds that they might stand against his holy mission in life. He was very strict in moral principles and avoided the luxurious life. He would not even chew betel. He disliked theories because they were frequented by public women, that means prostitutes. He spoke Bengali, Sanskrit, English, Latin, Urdu, Persian, and Orient, 7 languages. And he started writing books at age 12 and continued turning out a profuse number of volumes up until the time of his departure from this world. So any questions or comments? We have about a half an hour left before we greet the deities. But, yes?
What on his, on our disciplic succession, why is it his Diksha Guru in our...
Because the our disciplic succession is a Siksha succession. You'll find this in several other instances, like Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and Baladev Vijayabhushana. That is, Siksha is considered more important than Diksha. Now, Diksha is receiving the mantra, but Siksha is actually getting instruction. And so there's Sambandha Abhideya. Abhideya is actually considered a higher platform than Sambandha. And of course, then you have Prayojana after that. So that's generally the way our disciplic succession is described, as a Siksha succession. So those who are members of ISKCON can understand that, in a very real sense, their connection to Prabhupada is the most important connection. That will keep our movement together. And this is not exactly Ritvik philosophy. Ritvik means you take initiation from Prabhupada after he left the planet. But this is actually more dedicated to Prabhupada than even Ritvik philosophy, is that our most important connection is the Siksha relationship with this divine grace of the Prabhupada, no matter who we're initiated by. And this will keep our movement from fractioning off into different sects. As long as we understand that, we don't have like different cults within our movement of charismatic personalities. That's a danger, a big, big danger. So we keep Prabhupada first and foremost. And anyway, that's why it's described in the disciplic succession. Jai Srila Prabhupada, Jai Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur, Jai Shri Radhagaloka Nanda, Radhagaloka.